The interrelationship between the procreative and the unitive aspects of human sexuality was brilliantly explicated and provided with both a sense of continuity with the older tradition and an openness to what could yet develop in the theology of the body of Pope John Paul II. Here, Blessed Pope John Paul presents the tradition that we've already described in light of a view of the whole of theology, and in particular, he draws attention to the connections between moral theology on the one hand, that is to say, the implications of this tradition for bioethics and the area of human sexuality and intimacy, and also human spirituality and the notion of our relationship with the divine. It's an attempt to provide the understanding of interpersonal relationship, and especially interpersonal relationship in marriage, with a much broader and more comprehensive background than has previously been done in the history of the Church. So it is in many ways a summary of and an opening out to continued development of this theme. It's important to note the context in which this theology was articulated. It was not the subject of an encyclical, but rather it became the matter of a series of audiences. The Pope has regular audiences on Wednesdays on a variety of subjects, which Pope John Paul II decided to devote to the subject during the period from 1979 to 1984. These catecheses were interrupted periodically by holy days and also by the assassination attempt, which rendered the Pope unable to give these presentations for some time. The catecheses were not in any sense random. As it turns out, and this has been the product of research principally on the part of Michael Waldstein, who has published his own version of this catechetical material, it was based on a book originally written in Polish before John Paul II became Pope, which was entitled Man and Woman, He Created Them. It was originally written in Polish, but again never published, and at that time never translated, and it was this unpublished book that became the substance of these Wednesday audiences. Michael Waldstein has pointed out that this is important to bear in mind, because in order to give the audiences continuity, it was necessary to divide them into short sections that did not always correspond perfectly with the divisions within the book. And in order to make them comprehensible to the audiences, which changed every Wednesday, a certain amount of repetition was inevitable. And so there are really two primary sources of this material at this time. The first is the collected audiences, the collected papal catecheses as they were delivered, which can be downloaded from the Vatican website, but which have been gathered together and published in the same English translation as one finds on the Vatican website by Pauline Media, Books and Media. It was published in 1997 under the title The Theology of the Body, Human Love in the Divine Plan. And again, this is simply a verbatim record of those catecheses. Now, the second important presentation of this material has been edited by Waldstein, and it is based on his own translation, although he does not himself read or speak Polish, and so he's been dependent on other authors for this, but it is based on the book itself, which was the source of these catecheses. So it is an attempt to publish the book, which was never published during the Pope's lifetime, in a format that can be related to the catecheses as they were given. And this book form is called Man and Woman, He Created Them, A Theology of the Body, with a translation or modifications by Michael Waldstein and translated by others. This original book contains some material that was not included in the catecheses, and so it is more ample. And the organization and presentation of material, although it is generally the same as the order of the audiences, includes chapter titles which were not originally included and which are therefore not found in the published version of the catechesis as they were given. On the one hand, Waldstein points out that the original book gives us an insight into the broader vision and scope of this material. On the other hand, one has to admit that since the Pope himself was the author of this material, and it was his decision to divide it up into the catechesis, these divisions and the changes, which were relatively minor, need to be respected. And so it's probably helpful if one's going to do any detailed work on this material to have access to both these texts. Having said all of that, all of you who have spent time with this material know that it is not easy reading. This is not the kind of text that can be simply given to an adult education program in a parish with the expectation that people will find it fascinating and read it avidly. One needs some background in the Pope's own philosophical system, which is phenomenology, as well as an appreciation for his exegetical methodology, which is also to be found in all of his encyclicals. That is to say, commentary on biblical passages using both a traditional and a phenomenological approach, with careful attention to the meaning of words and their applications, which can be quite exciting if one reads it in the spirit of Lectio Divina, but which is actually rather difficult for people who, as it were, want to get to the point. So some of the material can seem to be very dense and difficult to interpret. For this reason, there have been modern interpreters of the theology of the body, and the principal one in the English-speaking world, and in particular in America, is Christopher West. He is a very talented presenter of this material and has studied it in depth. His approach has many, many supporters. He's very dynamic as far as a presenter is concerned. He can galvanize, energize people's excitement for this material, and he presents it in a way that is very comprehensible and engaging. However, he was recently criticized by Alice von Hildebrandt, the wife of Dietrich von Hildebrandt, whose texts on marriage were the basis of some of the Pope John Paul II's own interpretations, and so the von Hildebrandts have contributed significantly to this tradition. Alice von Hildebrandt found some of Christopher West's methods and approach rather more modern and somewhat shocking than her generation is able to appreciate. And I think this needs to be acknowledged, that one has to be very careful in explicating this material. On the one hand, it is a strong reemphasis of the Church's ancient but not always clear understanding that the experience of sexuality within marriage is a holy reality, is a reality that in a very real sense consecrates the marriage partners, and so one can speak of it with a kind of a strong admiration and indeed a kind of almost an awe. But at the same time, we live in a culture where sex is often spoken of rather casually or in images that can be rather graphic or to some appealing, but one has to recognize that there are generational differences in people's ability to appreciate these kinds of images, and thus I think it was between Alice von Hildebrandt and Christopher West. We had the occasion at the seminary where I teach to have Mr. West give a presentation, both for the faculty and students and also for the clergy who attended, and his presentation was certainly very engaging. It was quite fascinating, but not everyone was able to appreciate his approach, which included breaking into song, singing Bruce Springsteen lyrics, and doing Mel Gibson imitations as a way of demonstrating how strong in faith men need to be, and quoting the film Braveheart. Again, these kinds of things are simply a question of approach, but he also tends to use on occasion rather graphic imagery, which can have a tendency to perplex people who believe, and I would agree with them, that a recovery of modesty is a very important part of our appreciation of the theology of the body as well. So there is some controversy at present in terms of exactly how one should present this material. Christopher West took some time off for meditation and reflection, and I believe his approach is somewhat different and perhaps a little less, if not animated, it's probably still very animated, but presumably less objectionable at this time. And I say that because since the material itself is rather difficult for ordinary people without theology degrees or background to read, one does need people like Christopher West to explicate and popularize this material. And Waldstein includes in his a translation, editing of the Pope's original book, Man and Woman, He Created Them, a section that compares the different organization of this material used by different individuals who are at this time making this material more widely available to the Catholic public. Again, I say all of that by way of introduction for those who may not be familiar with the material itself or with its present explication, but also because I've used two little conventions, TOB and WS, to indicate the two different texts in which this material can be found, or at least the two principal texts. And the one refers to Waldstein's book, the other is the Theology of the Body as it's published in the unedited form by Pauline Books in 1997. The texts we will be looking at all too briefly together are from the papal audiences as they can be downloaded from the website and which are then the version or translation that one finds in the Theology of the Body version of the, which is to say not the original book form of the material. What I've included here is material from two sections and for a very specific reason. I think it's rather widely known that the Theology of the Body is a very brilliant attempt to make the tradition of the Church in regard to traditional articulations very clear and even to bring it forward so that the holiness and beauty of everything connected with marriage, but especially connected with human sexuality, can be understood, spoken about, and taught in light of the tradition and in light of modern culture. What is often not appreciated is the fact that this also places the theology of the body, that is the theology of marriage, of human sexuality, of the interrelationship between the various components of human sexuality, the unitive and the procreative, in a broader context that allows it to be seen within the context of modern Catholic spirituality as well. And so I've included the not as frequently commented texts from the resurrection, which perfects the person, which happens to be from the later part of the papal catechesis. Part 4, again, as it's given on the Vatican website, particularly the audience from December 9th in 1981, that describes theosis, that is, divinization, as a way of understanding the final ramifications of the theology of the body, including the experience of human sexuality, even though the experience of the world to come transcends and fulfills the experience of sexuality. This is important because here it is marriage that provides the background for this explication, and not as much was much more commonly the case in the past, the theology of consecrated virginity. So the Pope is including marriage and the theology of interpersonal relationship as a way of looking at the important category of divinization, as it's often called in the East, or sanctifying grace, as the category tends to be referred to in the Christian West, in the Thomistic tradition. That is the one part that I have included, and the other is the highlighting of the fact, which the Pope himself emphasized, but which is often not as appreciated as it might be, that in many ways this catechesis itself can be seen as a reflection on and a meditation, an extended meditation on an application of Humanae Vitae and Gaudium et Spes, the very text that we've looked at already. So the Pope saw this as being a way of commenting on these authoritative documents and bringing them forward into the modern context. And again, we must bear in mind that this is a very different and much larger amount of material than one finds in a papal encyclical, for example, which would tend to be much more condensed and precise. And one, I think, can say that the insights that one finds here were clearly focused into and echoed most appropriately in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, where all of the texts we've looked at before, as well as the theology of the body, are brought together in a rather clear and lapidary, gem-like kind of way. So the second text we'll be looking at has to do with the Pope's direct reference to Humanae Vitae and Gaudium et Spes. And so having taken up quite a lot of time just introducing the material, let's look at it rather briefly, and I'd advise you to come back and take a look at it in a rather more depth, because again, it's the kind of material that does need to be reread in order to be well appreciated. If we could look at the very beginning, number one, the resurrection perfects the person. A characteristic of the Pope's theology is that we have to begin with an awareness that we were created for a purpose. And so this whole series of catecheses begin, and this perplexed some people, with a meditation on the book of Genesis and the creation story. The Pope explicated it as a way of reminding us that we were created with a purpose, and the vision of or the story of our creation, the story of Eden and of the first human parents, is a way of looking at what we were made for. This section, the section on the resurrection, is a reminder that what we were made for is what we will become again. And so the Pope is convinced that by looking both to the beginning for God's purposes and the end, that is, what our salvation leads us toward, these will give us visions of a clear sense of how we can now cooperate with the will of God in becoming what we are made for. In other words, we're not the result of a blind series of evolutionary forces pushing us forward into an unknown future. We are created with a purpose, with a potential for integration that can only be grasped if we're willing to admit the existence of that purpose, acknowledge what it is, and realize that it is both what we were made for and it lies ahead of us as our eternal destiny. And so, in this notion of resurrection, one of the words or one of the ideas that is highlighted is the idea of domination or control, but not in the sense of being superior to, but actually the word that is used both in Humanae Vitae and in other texts is moderatio. And it doesn't mean quite moderation in the English sense, but it means being able to be in balance, and to be able to have a level and balanced control over forces that seek to move one to one direction or the other. And so at the beginning of this catechesis, he talks about the fact, and this is highlighted in yellow, eschatological human beings will be free from an opposition between spirit and body. The forces of spirit will permeate the energies of the body. This does not mean a superiority of somehow the mental to the physical. On the contrary, if we drop down a little bit further to the text that's highlighted in white with dark, with boldface red, the resurrection will consist in the perfect participation of all that is physical in human beings with what is spiritual in them. It will be the perfect realization of what is personal in us. And here, one has to be aware that the Pope is using the word personal in a specific sense. Indeed, the idea of a person is an important part of his theology, but it's rather too complex for us to go into here. So he is talking about the conflict that exists between our desires and what we should be on the one hand, and suggesting that or asserting that we are intended for a future, a destiny in which there is no opposition. There is rather an integration of these things, a perfect participation. Not so much a question of domination as a consecration and participation of all of our energies and capacities. And then if we continue down a little further to number three, the section that I've labeled divinization, this is where he uses that word. Divinization is a term that is widely used in the Eastern Christian churches, both in the Orthodox churches and in the Eastern Rite Catholic churches, to describe what is often described as sanctifying grace in the West. That is, the appropriation of or the transmission to human beings of what is more properly God-like, and things like our eternal destiny to be immortal, to be not capable of dying, our capacity to perceive God. All of these things reflect what has classically been described as a participation in God. Things that are mirrored in the liturgy, the Eucharistic liturgy, and certainly in many spiritual texts by very Orthodox authors. It's a word that is a little alarming to people in the West, but it's very clear that Pope John Paul II wanted it again to be a part of our vocabulary. It's used in the Catechism of the Church, and so it's clearly something we need to retrieve. And here he talks about it as a form of spiritualization that does not consist in becoming less corporeal, but becoming more integrated. The text that's highlighted and indented, he says, this is a participation in the divine nature, which, by the way, is a quote from the letter of Peter, participation in the interior life of God himself. Penetration and permeation of what is essentially human by what is essentially divine. And he talks about this as resulting, a couple of sentences later, as a new formation of the whole personal subjectivity of human beings in accordance with union with God. And then in number four, and that's the point that I particularly wanted us to be aware of in this context, divinization is something in which the human body will also take part. We will be united with the vision of God face to face. He hints at, and unfortunately this is a rather dense text that would require a lot of discussion, the discovery of the nuptial meaning of the body, above all as the virginal meaning of being male and female, that is the fundamental realities both symbolized by and lived out in the complementarity and distinction of male and female on the one hand, as something that both touches on the body. And then he hints in number five at our eternal goal is to receive the self-communication of God to the whole of creation, and in particular to humankind. All of this is a way of saying that our theology of marriage, our theology of sexuality, our sense of multiple meanings within the act of mutual self-giving is not just something that pertains to the specifically ethical realm of the choices we make now, but actually are a participation in something that reaches out towards eternity. So in this way, all Catholic theology of sexuality, of the body, and of things connected with bioethics that look at the multiple meanings of human sexuality and their implication are caught up into a broader spiritual understanding that lies literally beyond the world itself. And the last section that I'd like us to look at, and again, this is all too brief, a glance at a very, very complex and broad-ranging subject. I've labeled it number two, and it's taken from the portions of the catechesis that are direct and explicit reflections on Humanae Vitae, although, as the Pope pointed out, this was really the underlying thesis or approach of the whole series of catechesis themselves. In number one, he points out that the questions he's going to raise are already raised in Gaudium et Spes and in Humanae Vitae, and what he does in a very delightful way is combine two fundamental questions of, number one, the idea of the domination of the forces of nature on the one hand, and the idea of self-mastery or control over one's own impulses on the other. And then, as we'll see, also he brings together the idea of the communication of persons or the communion of persons, which is the goal of our existence. Now, the idea of a domination of matter or a domination of creation, and by extension and more appropriately a control of or a moderation under the notion of will of one's desires, is really what is intended and what is being reflected upon. And the word that is translation as domination and moderation is actually the same thing. It's also the word that's used to translated as control. It's all the same Latin word moderatio, either in its noun or verbal forms. And it isn't just a question of being in charge of and having something subjected to one, but rather it's exactly what the Pope has highlighted in this rather more eschatological section that we've talked about earlier. It isn't a question of so much domination as a full participation that is a perfect realization of what we're intended to be, not so much a victory of one part of the self or another, but again, perfect participation, perfect acknowledgement of the value of these forces being properly used for good. The Pope is pointing out and meditating on the fact that there's a tendency to want to dominate and control the world that is seen as being hostile, and that is one of the objects of science, and the tragedy is that one then applies this methodology to what one regards as less than perfectly controlled in the body, and so the same methods that are used to subdue the outer world is then used to subdue the interior world, and this is one of the fundamental philosophical errors of the problem of contraception. In other words, as he points out, and again you can look at this first section in more detail on your own, this would make us an object of manipulation. We would become ourselves, as it were, users and abusers of ourselves. In section 2, he mentions the notion of the language of the body, an important concept in this theology that means that we express truths by what we do and not just by what we say, and especially things that involve touch or intimacy or sexuality. This is a language that has its own deep meaning independent of whatever meaning one wants to assign to the act. And the Pope and the Catholic tradition would assert that to have sex with someone is to effectively vow yourself in covenant to them, whether you intend to do that or not, that that is what your body is saying. And the tragedy is, if you want this to be an occasion for a simple brief interaction that you don't intend to repeat, then effectively you have lied with your own body to yourself and to the other, and you're being untrue to what is fundamentally most human within you. And if we drop down to number 3, sacramental and personal dimensions, and look towards towards number 5, actually, the highlighted text that's bold-faced in red, insofar as we are master of ourselves, we have acquired this moderatio that really is an integration of our capacity to choose, and he's thinking in particular of natural family planning as a place where choice and loving are interrelated. It is only insofar as we are capable of doing that in regard to ourselves, not dominating or subjugating or being subjugated or dominated, but rather it's only insofar as we discover this moderatio, this proper control that is balanced, that we can become gift to one another. So it's only through learning the skills, he would say, that natural family planning can teach, that one discovers what it means to become and to be, and this is highlighted in red as well, a communion of persons, or, as he puts it in number 7, a personal communion. So he is developing this idea of the communion of persons, extending it elsewhere in the catechesis. He relates it to the communion of persons, which is God in God's very self. So this is a reflection of God, but he here makes it clear that these notions are not just theoretical ideas that have to do with a kind of a spiritual goal, but are actually practicable in the context of one's own choice in marriage. And so if we drop down then to the next section, number 13, continence deepens personal communion. And here again, I'm afraid this has been a rather long lecture, and I apologize for that, but it is very important material. If we move down to number 4, he points out the idea of mastery of self, and here again the word mastery is moderatio, understood in a very positive sense, an integrative sense. It determines, as he puts it, the naturalness of the method. It is a participation in what already exists in nature. It is an acknowledgement and a gift of oneself to that natural process, and it results in the capacity to then become a true, as he puts it in number 5, communion of persons, a communio personarum. So in all of this, this very long explication, which I think is going to become more popular and more widely known as the years go by within the Catholic context, Humanae Vitae is by no means something that can be shoved to one side. On the contrary, it's being highlighted as one of the most essential ways of looking at how we can become people capable of exercising that true moderatio, that integration of that control, in a positive sense, that domination of that which threatens to unseat us in a way that makes us already now beginning to live a communion of persons, which is our eternal goal and destiny as Christians.